Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Euros with Football Social Daily.
Tonight we will find out the first finalist in this summer's Euros. Will it be Italy or will it be Spain? The Italians have looked the team to beat so far this tournament, but the Spanish know exactly what it takes to reach a major final. Wembley is the venue for a place in the Euro 2020 showpiece. We'll discuss who we think will get there on today's Football Social Daily. Also on the podcast, we'll be looking at some of the latest Premier League transfer news as Danny Ings rejects a new Southampton contract and Manchester United step up their pursuit of an emerging French star. Plus, with England set to take on Denmark in their European Championship semi-final tomorrow, we take a look at how Gareth Southgate has captured the imagination of the Three Lions fans, as well as proving a few wrong along the way too. I'm Niall, welcome along to today's podcast. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social, keeping your finger on the pulse right throughout the Euros. Hit subscribe and that way you'll never miss an episode of the show again. The Premier League season is fast approaching too, and when that starts, you'll have a daily podcast to enjoy from us 7 days a week of the latest top flight news and views. Alongside me for today's episode of Football Social Daily, we've got Steve McNaughton. How's it going, Steve?
Hey, all good, boys. All good.
Nice one. I mean, I think you're a bit like me when it comes to being an England fan. You're very reluctant to say those three words, it's coming home.
Yeah, definitely. I've maintained that throughout the process, and I will maintain it until we see what happens tomorrow night.
I haven't said it since the tournament started. I've made a concerted effort not to, but I reckon, Steve, you've probably not said it since 98.
probably somewhat like that. You know, I think since the second rendition of Skinner and Badil's Three Lions, I've probably started knocking that on the head.
We've also got Stefan Armstrong on today's show. How are you, Steph?
I'm a mate. Yeah, I'm all right. You know, both of my teams are out of the Euros, but so I think I found some Danish in my family tree, actually.
So I was going to say, you mysteriously disappeared after Scotland and Germany both got dumped out, and now you come sort of crawling your way back in. What do you make of that? Because we haven't spoken to you since England beat Germany. It was a good game, I thought, and England, I thought, deserved to win. Just from a German perspective, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, it was a game defined by taking your chances, really. And Germany didn't. England did. And do you know what? They got going against Portugal, Germany, but they weren't really at the races for the whole tournament. And the transition from Yogi Löw over to Hansi Flick, I think it's already begun. And you can see a lot of those ex-Bayern players who no longer had a sniff under Flick at Bayern suddenly thinking, oh God, it's all over. It's all doom and gloom. You could smell it almost. So yeah, shame about that. And Scotland, hey, I mean, they did better than anybody thought they would, so yeah, happy days there.
They got a point, that's better than none.
Exactly. And the way I see it is England deserved to win Euro 2020 because they got a draw against Scotland, so they deserve it.
Well, those group stages feel like an absolute eternity ago now, and obviously Scotland and England were in the same group. England are in their semi-final tomorrow against Denmark, which we will touch upon a little bit later. We'll also go into it in more detail on tomorrow's episode of Football Social Daily, so hit subscribe and that way you won't miss that. But tonight it's the first semi-final at Wembley, Italy versus Spain. We have officially reached the business end of the tournament, the business end of Euro 2020. For me, Steve, and for many other people, Italy have been the standout side in the tournament so far. Do you think they go into this semi-final against Spain as favourites?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, that they've been sensational, and I think from the opening game, you know, when they played Turkey in Rome and spanked them 3-0, you just got a sense that something was bubbling away, didn't you? You know, with this Italy team, and they've just entertained. I mean, I think the Austria game was a tough game for them, you know, where they kind of almost limped through that, didn't they? But I think, you know, they were sensational against Belgium that first half, and they're a really good team. And I think they set the bar from the first game in the tournament, and everyone else has been, you know, trying to emulate that kind of football, that energy, that desire, that passion for sure. And I think that, you know, I think they will get to the final tonight. And I don't think it'll be like a 3-0 like they put on a few teams. I think it'll be quite tight tonight. I wouldn't even be surprised if it was penalties.
You mentioned that Austria game, and obviously they beat Belgium in the quarterfinal after that. So we are going back a couple of matches now. But for me, it felt like Austria, I was watching it with my dad at the time, and I said, I think Austria are going to run out of steam here. And then as soon as it got into extra time, Steve, they brought on a couple of substitutions and grabbed two goals, and that was that. You know, there was no way Austria were coming back. I think Italy look remarkably fit, considering the seasons that so many of these top players around Europe have had, in terms of there not being much rest time and strange circumstances, considering coronavirus and everything else. I mean, it's quite remarkable how Mancini's got them playing.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And I, you know, I mean, since when have we ever seen an Italy team with that high press, those energy levels, the you know, the squad unity, and how solid they are as well. I mean, Mancini has done a wonderful job, and we're talking about an Italy team that haven't lost in 32 games. The last time Italy got beat was you know, I think it was September 2018, something mad like that, you know, the last time they got a defeat. But having said that, Leonardo Spinazzola, who's potentially player of the tournament until obviously his unfortunate injury the other night, will be a big miss, because a lot goes down that, you know, Italian left hand side. And I think you're probably looking at Emerson coming in to replace him potentially, and I think they won't have that threat, so it will be very, very interesting.
Yeah, you're spot on, Steve. Spinazzola will miss the rest of the Euros and possibly the start of the new season as well. He's ruptured his Achilles tendon. He has had an operation on that, so he will miss the game against Spain tonight. But as you say, 13 wins in a row for Italy now, 32 games without defeat. Do you think Spain can crack them, Stefan?
I hope they don't crack them, because I hate the way that Spain play football. All this possession nonsense, it just goes on and on and on. It slows the game right down. It's boring. It's boring. So I hope they don't. But I can see them having the ability to nullify Italy, unlike some of the other teams that Italy have played so far in the Euros. That high press isn't really going to work as well. Especially that almost counter-attacking football that Italy play at times ain't going to work as well against Spain as it would against a team like Austria, for example. But I think Italy showed in the quarters against Belgium that they can still play football of old. They can still play that defensive game, playing out from the back, which will upset Spain a little bit as well. But to crack Italy, you need to score goals. And Spain, although they've had a 5-0 win, I think everybody would agree actually that they're not out and out, you know, goal scorers in this team. Morata is suffering somewhat. He's a bit like a gone off yogurt, you know what I mean? Like, you fancy him, but it doesn't smell quite right.
Obviously, they've got Moreno as well, who's had an unbelievable season for Villarreal in La Liga, and obviously they won the Europa League as well. So, you know, he kind of earned his place in the Spanish team for the Euros. But as you say, Steph, they seem to be good at creating chances, and it does take them a while to do it with all this possession. But they've not been so good at finishing them. And you mentioned that 5-0 win earlier in the tournament. That still somewhat feels like a bit of an anomaly. So it's almost now or never for them, isn't it, to find that goal-scoring touch against Italy? Because if they don't, they'll be knocked out.
Yeah, I'm just not that excited about the Spain team. I know they've got to the semi-final of the Euros, and I'm talking about they're not that exciting, but beating Slovakia 5-0, I don't think that's, you know, the sign that Spain have come and are going to boss it. They need players like Ferran Torres to step up a little bit. And they've got these big players at the back, the Man City contingency. You can grab a goal at, you know, set pieces and that. So it'll be really interesting. But the thing with Spain is, like, I found everybody's talking about the young lad, is Pedri. And I always find in tournaments when countries start, you know, like, really bigging up young players who haven't really done anything on the main stage yet, it almost feels a little bit desperate for me. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but that's interesting because that was going to be my next question. It seems very much that this is a Spanish team with one eye on the future from Luis Enrique, Steve, because as Stefan says, there are some young players in that side that could really kind of explode potentially over the next few seasons. Ferran Torres is one who I think's had a decent first season in the Premier League with Manchester City, and Pedri is another one, and there's a couple of others in that squad as well. So do you think that is the case, you know, with one eye on the future and possible future tournaments for Spain? Because even though the skeleton of the squad that got them to the World Cup final and the Euros in back-to-back tournaments, that's not there anymore. But obviously there are players that are experienced in the Spanish squad that can maybe offer that arm around the shoulder for the young players. So do you think that that's, you know, the vision from Enrique is maybe looking ahead to future tournaments and reaching a semi-final of the Euros is a bit of a bonus?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, they'll have took that. If you'd have said to Spain before the tournament, you know, how does the semi-final sound? I think they'd have took it all day. Definitely an eye on the future. You know, this is a transitional Spain squad. Obviously, you know, it's without Sergio Ramos in there, who's obviously 35 years of age now. And some of the old kind of guard, like, you know, your Sergio Busquets is I mean, he must be like 32, 33, something like that. But then, and Aspilicueta obviously as well is into his 30s. But, you know, I think, you know, they'll be excited about the likes of Simon. They'll be, you know, he's a 24-year-old goalkeeper. You know, Pau Torres, who's partnering Laporte at centre-back at the minute. And Pedri looks unbelievable. You know, Barcelona have got a real talent on the hands, and I'm led to believe are struggling to keep hold of him as well at the moment. And then, you have to, like, see your Fabian Ruiz is from Napoli in there. And, Spain are going to come again. I agree with Stefan, the possession stuff can be a bit laborious, and they concede goals. I mean, they conceded three against Croatia. You know, they conceded against Poland and Switzerland as well. So, you know, for the 12 goals they've scored in the tournament, you know, they're conceding heavily as well. So I think, you know, semi-finals is probably where Spain run out of steam. And I think if you'd have said that before, they'd have probably accepted that begrudgingly.
Yeah, other players like Brahim Diaz and Ansu Fati, just to name two, under the age of 21, didn't make the Spain squad for Euro 2020, so definitely maybe one eye on the future. We touched upon Mancini very, very briefly earlier on, Stefan. Do you think he's underrated as a coach? Obviously, he won the Premier League with Manchester City in what is arguably the most memorable top-flight campaign of all time in England. Obviously, Aguero with that famous 93-20 winner against Queen's Park Rangers, which handed City the title on goal difference. He's probably more famous for that than anything else, and he was a good player in his day, Roberto Mancini. Do you think he's an underrated manager?
I think it depends who you talk to. Any Man City player, any Man City fan, sorry, is going to hold him as the guy who nailed it, obviously getting Man City their first title. After Man City, the problem with Man City is it's a bit of a poison chalice if you don't win that Champions League. And interestingly, Pep still hasn't got that, but he's kind of immune because what he's done at Barcelona and the respect that he's got in the game. I think Mancini probably doesn't have that respect as a coach that somebody like Guardiola does. But he did great at Man City, getting them that league title. Didn't really do much at Galatasaray. In fact, it was a disaster. Fenerbahce really took over that season. Inter Milan, it didn't really click either for him. Inter obviously had to wait for Conte to come in to get their first league title in about 10 years. And then he went, I don't know where he went in Russia. He went somewhere in Russia anyway.
Zenit, was it?
Yeah, it might have been, Steve. I'm not sure. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is he's had success and he's proved that, you know, he is a successful manager. But he didn't really kick on from that. So something like a national team job is perfect for him, and I think he's settled into it. And I don't know the stats, but going 30 odd games unbeaten and 13 in a row with a win and all that, that's success. It's proof that it's success, and he seems to have brought a nice style to the way Italy play football. For me, Italy, you know me, Niles, I love the 90s. For me, Italy is all about go Lazio and all these great, you know, hard defensive players and these flair attacking players feeding off it, and like big henchmen strikers like Christian Vieri and all that. as we've said, and I'm sure you've said in the podcast over the last few weeks, that Italy dynamic has changed and they can now play two different types of football. So you've got to give him credit for that. And I'm sure that if Italy get into the final, let alone win it, it'll be heralded as a massive success. So you've got to give him respect for that, I think.
Yeah, golissimo. That's what we want from Italy tonight. At least that's what a lot of people are hoping for, particularly if they've got them in their work sweepstake, for example. But who would England rather face, Steve? If England beat Denmark, which obviously is no guarantee, the way Denmark have surprised plenty throughout this tournament, it is not going to be easy, much like the Ukraine game. Everyone was saying the same thing before that. If England do beat Denmark and get through to the final, who would they rather face? Who would you rather face as an England fan?
I think if they can get through the, you know, what will be a tight semi-final against Denmark, I think England would sooner play Spain. Based on the fact that, you know, Spain have conceded 5 in the tournament so far. So they can be got at, if you like, and, you know, they do concede from set pieces. Whereas it's Italy, I've only conceded 2, I believe, trying to kind of very quickly go through the games again. I think Italy have only conceded 2 so far, so they're very miserly. And I think England will fancy themselves more against Spain than they would do Italy. Italy would be a really difficult game for England, I feel. And I think Spain, you've got the beating of Spain on 7 days a week.
Italy versus Spain, Euro 2020's first semi-final takes place tonight at Wembley. The second is England versus Denmark tomorrow. We will talk about that England game in more detail tomorrow. We'll also talk about Gareth Southgate a little bit later on in the podcast. But stick with us because we're having a short break. And next we'll be talking about the latest Premier League transfer gossip, including news around Southampton and Manchester United. Welcome back to Football Social Daily from Sports Social. My name's Niall. I've got Steve and Stefan with me, and time to take a look at the latest top flight transfer gossip. We're going to do a bit of a rumour wrap on today's Football Social Daily, starting with Southampton, where Danny Ings has turned down a 4-year contract offered to him by Saints. It's the clearest sign yet that he wants out of St. Mary's. It would have made him the highest ever paid Southampton player, taking him to age 34. That's a long contract to offer someone in the current climate, Stefan, and on top wages as well. Are you surprised he's turned it down, or are you not too shocked by it?
Probably wants to play in a more successful team, so I'm not surprised he's turned it down. I'm of the opinion that Danny Ings is Southampton level. I know there's rumours about him going to Man United. I don't think he'd get a game, or if he did, he'd play a bit part. When United eventually go in the Europa League next year, he'd just play every Thursday. So I think he's Southampton level. I think the atmosphere and the setup works for him. They've kind of built that attacking kind of triangle around him. I think he should stay at Southampton, to be honest with you. I don't know where he would move for it to go better for him. I'm not sure.
Do you think his age has got anything to do with it? He's 28, Steve, and as I say, 4-year contract would take him to 32. Sorry, I think I said 34 earlier. It would take him to age 32, by which point, as a 32-year-old, he's probably less likely to get a move away. Does it feel like he's just trying to strike while the iron's hot? Because 34 goals in 67 Premier League games since his return from injury is a great record.
He's absolutely doing that. You know, he's just trying to get that kind of probably one big move, isn't he? Another big move, sorry, from Southampton, because you don't know what Southampton are going to do next season. You know, they could be in a relegation battle again. They could be floating around the top of the bottom half of the league. You know, I think that he's had an incredible season, done really well. Very unlucky not to go to the Euros with England, and I think he'll be watching what is going on at Tottenham with real interest. Because if Harry Kane leaves, I could see them probably going in for Danny Ings to try and fill that void, if you like, for a season or two. But yeah, I think he's a great professional. He's overcome loads of adversity. I get what we're saying about the Southampton level and stuff like that, but I think as a professional, he'll want to test himself somewhere. I think Tottenham, if he would be a potential destination for him. I think Man City want Harry Kane, don't they? And I think Man United might have a look at Harry Kane as well, because he seems to be spending quite a bit of cash this summer. But I don't think...
Would you have him back at Liverpool, Steve? Obviously, it really didn't work out for him with the injury. But let's just say Origi leaves. And I know it's probably a slightly different style now, But if you give Ings chances, he's shown he can score goals. Would you say, like, as a replacement for Origi, he would be welcome back at Anfield?
Yeah, if the price was right, definitely. I mean, I don't know what Southampton are going to want for him. He's in the last year of his contract. So for me, that is a 25, tops 30 million fee for him, which would seem fair. I think if it gets a... If it's late 30s or early 40s, it becomes a bit silly then, doesn't it? But he would have to be happy with a bit part at Liverpool. You know, like Steph touched on there, he's not going to break up that front four, really. You know, if he doesn't play Firmino, he's going to play Jota or vice versa. So I think Danny Ings would probably find it quite difficult to get games at Liverpool, but great professional. He's the quality that we'd need coming off the bench, because that's what cost us last season when we had the injuries. He's certainly much better than Divock Origi, even though he's a smaller guy and not as muscular. But yeah, I'd have him in an instant if the deal was right.
Isn't that a damning forecast for Tottenham, like, for next season, that they're potentially going to lose Harry Kane and to replace him, they're going to get Danny Ings in? Has that not got Europa League football written all over it?
Well, they've got the Europa Conference League, haven't they? Not even Europa League. The new competition, the third tier of European football.
The Intertoto Cup.
Yeah, it's basically the equivalent of that. But like you say, he's been linked with Spurs, Steph, and both Manchester clubs. If he's obviously turned down this contract, his view is going somewhere and playing regular football. And this is what Ralf Hasenhüttl was saying when the Premier League season was taking place a few months ago. He was saying he thinks Danny Ings will stay at Southampton because he can be guaranteed first team football. He's the first name on the team sheet every week. He's starting every game when he's fit. He's a bit of a talisman for us. He knows the club. He's a Southampton fan. All of these things considered led Ralf Hasenhüttl, the manager, to believe that he will stay at the club. So, you know, he's linked with both Manchester clubs and Spurs, but is it worth him going unless he does get the guarantee that he's going to be starting every game? Because if Spurs, let's just say, do keep hold of Harry Kane by some miracle, you know, Danny Ings isn't going to get a sniff.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a 28-year-old Premier League footballer, you want to be playing week in, week out. You do not want to be sat on a bench, coming on in the 70th minute every second week. Because if the chances don't fall for you early on, it can go months without scoring a goal. We've seen it so many times with so many players in the Premier League history who have made moves from slightly smaller clubs to bigger clubs. Crouch, for example, when he went to Liverpool, it took him ages to score a goal. That's what will happen. So I don't know why I'd do it. I'd just stay at Southampton and be the main man. Obviously, it's easy for me to say, sat on my sofa here in York, about to eat some Cheerios. But you know, an ambitious Premier League striker probably wants to go and play with the best, and I completely get that. And if you get the opportunity to, a bit like Brathwaite, who moved to Barcelona, you know, if you get the opportunity to move to a massive club and train with Messi, then. Yeah, I'd be tempted to do it, but it won't look great in the history books when, you know, you've got some stats next year, played 20, 19 off the bench, scored 2. You know what I mean? You're just going to, for your next contract, which is realistically going to be his last contract, he's not going to get a very good one.
I know they say football's tribal, but I'd still rather have you with a belly full of Cheerios down at Fratton Park, Stefan, than Danny Ings, that's for sure. He's turned down a 4-year deal just down the M27 at St Mary's. That's the news coming out of Southampton today. Interesting to see where his future lies. Is it in the Premier League still with Southampton, or is it with another top flight side? Manchester United are a side who have been linked with Danny Ings, but they've also been chasing Raphael Varane and Eduardo Camavinga, two very different players of two very different ages. Varane, of course, is a centre-back. We've spoken of him earlier on this week on the podcast and what he could do at Manchester United if they get their man. Also, Eduardo Camavinga, who is a slightly lesser-known player, but one that's really a bright talent coming out of France, plays for Stade Rennes in Ligue 1 and has made his French debut already. Broke into Ligue 1 at the age of 16 is when he made his top flight French debut. Still so young, one of the brightest emerging talents on the continent. Reports suggest he wants to stay in France but could leave for around £25 million. Varane could be available for 50. They've already got Sancho for £73 million, Manchester United. Do you think these signings, Steve, would turn United into title contenders next term, presuming they do manage to get all three of them? They've already got Sancho over the line, of course.
No, in a word. I think that the Camavinga is definitely one for the future. So I don't think he'd start for Man United next season if they did sign him. He's bags of potential with him. He's got one France cap, hasn't he, at the age of 18. He played in a friendly for them. I think he's played Champions League games as well. He's played four games in the Champions League, something like that. He's a talent, and he's going to be a big player. But at 18, I don't see him starting week in, week out for United. So I think that'll be one for the future. Varane, obviously, he's been at Real Madrid, won everything. Loads of experience, French international. I think he would bring a steal to that back line that's been missing. But I think that a lot of players go to Man United and don't make it. I'm thinking most recently, like, you know, Donny van der Beek, who was fantastic at Ajax, you know, when he was playing, you know, alongside Frankie de Jong and obviously Matthijs de Ligt in that generation of the Ajax team. And he's just under Solskjaer has been lost at United, not had a look in, been some bizarre decisions made around him. And I just think that's the only concern, really. And I think that's probably why I don't believe it would turn them into legitimate title challengers. I think that the other teams will be ahead of them in that. The other three that I'm mentioning, you know, obviously City, Liverpool and Chelsea, I think will probably finish above them still next season with them signings.
The signing of Varane will definitely make it closer. I mean, he's class and I feel like he's been playing forever. He's 28 years old. He would be awesome at the back with Harry Maguire. That would make things more interesting. In terms of Camavinga, I'll be honest with you, the only thing I've seen of him is an 11-minute YouTube clip of him basically picking up the ball in midfield, taking it around somebody and passing it up. He looks like an enthusiastic Paul Pogba, which is what Man United need. Yeah, sign him. Brilliant, why not? See if you can integrate him in the squad and see if he can do something in the next few years. 100%, definitely. But he won't change the forecast for next season. Varane will make things slightly more interesting. Obviously, Sancho's there as well. So it's looking good for Man United. They're coming good on some of these long-term transfer rumours, which you never thought were going to happen. So that's a worry for the likes of Man City if they don't get their targets like Kane. But I expect they will. So everybody's going to improve, Liverpool as well. So it'll be very similar to this season, I think. I think it'll still be Man City kind of on the forefront, and Liverpool and Man United, potentially a Chelsea chasing.
Camavinga's one of those players with a year left on his contract, so could sort of go for a cut price. I think teams were quoted at 60 to 70 million last season. You know, kind of getting a decent, almost half-price deal there for Camavinga. So that's one to keep an eye on. You mentioned the central midfield area for Manchester United, Stefan. Do they need to shake that up? Is that where they need to improve? You say that Varane maybe might make a bigger difference, but at the moment their central midfield options, Fred, McTominay, Pogba and Matic, and if you kind of go through them with a tooth comb and look at their strengths and weaknesses, Matic is obviously an experienced player, but he's sort of on the wrong side of 30 now. I think he's 32, coming on to 33. Pogba, people say that he isn't the same player for Manchester United as he is for France, but there's no doubting his quality. And Fred and McTominay are almost a trusted duo in the middle of the park in the big games for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So do you think that there needs to be a bit of a shake-up there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's not exciting, is it? Fred, some games I just don't know where he is. McTominay, I just think he's almost a budget replacement for a world-class midfielder. Matic has kind of had his time now. And then the likes of the squad players like Mata, they're old and moving on, out of contract. Yeah, an overhaul is needed in that centre midfield. Man United fans wish they had the reliability of a Paul Pogba who turns up every game. That would help an awful lot and take that pressure off in the midfield. But they don't have that. So undoubtedly, yeah, they do need a signing if not two in centre midfield. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you where Fred is. He's in the Copa America final because Brazil.
Is he? Did he make it?
Brazil beat Peru 1-0 overnight. You'll be pleased to know, Stefan. So there we go. We might well see him winning a trophy for Brazil this summer. That's the latest for the transfer news in the Premier League. Manchester United and Southampton top of that agenda. Of course, we'll have all the latest transfer dealings in the Premier League on our website, sport-social.co.uk. So head over there and check out all 20 of the Premier League teams and the latest transfer gossip relating to those sides will be on the website. That's sport-social.co.uk. Time for another short break, and afterwards we'll be talking about England. Gareth Southgate has captured the imagination of England fans again. We'll be discussing the Three Lions boss next. Hello, welcome back to Football Social Daily. The Daily Euros podcast, I suppose you could say now, because we are in the middle of the tournament. The semi-final stage is upon us. Italy against Spain tonight. We've already discussed that in the first section of the show. And tomorrow, it's England against Denmark. But before we actually talk about the game, which we'll do on tomorrow's show, I wanted to discuss with Stefan and Steve about Gareth Southgate. He's got so many likeable attributes, Steve. Got a lot of empathy. He speaks well. He seems to be loved by the press. He seems to be able to deflect from situations. And he's not afraid to stand up for what he believes in. So even though he's had a lot of questions, he's also gained a lot of fans as well, Gareth Southgate, from the way he's kind of handled things over the time he's been the England manager. The most thing that people question him on is his team selections. When actually, over the tournament, they all seem to have paid off. Do you think fans were wrong to question him? Does he know exactly what he's doing, or is it understandable why some supporters are looking at the team selection and going, well, hang on a sec, you're leaving some of our better players out of the side?
Yeah, I think in the early part of the competition, certainly the group games, I think it was justified because it certainly felt like England were playing with the handbrake on. You know, the team selections weren't particularly bold. And I think, you know, I can't remember which game it was. It might have been a Croatia or Scotland game, where I thought it was, you know, on paper, I thought it was one of the weakest England teams that he could play. But he has just probably had the thought that if he just kind of motor through the group stage and tick over and get through it without any massive problems, he can then start turning up, you know, the volume in you know, the knockout stages, which is obviously what he's done. And I just think that he has got everything right. I think he's a really nice guy, comes across really well, doesn't take any nonsense, isn't afraid to make the big calls, as we know, you know, with some of the selections before the Euro, certainly around Trent Alexander-Arnold and a lot of the pressure he was getting from certain pundits around that. I think he's great. I think the England job suits him. I think he comes across really well. I think tactically it'll be interesting to see how he gets on against Italy if they do get in the final tomorrow night. But yeah, I think he's the right man, right time for the job, and he is promoting a culture of making sure that England go out and do what they're supposed to do. So massive hats off to him. I think if they got beat in the semi-finals, I think that'd still be disappointing. You know, if Denmark put them out tomorrow night, but I think, you know, if they have a close run final with Italy and just don't quite make it, I think a lot of people would still be very, very pleased with Gareth Southgate.
Let's be quintessentially English for a second and presume that England do get knocked out and be pessimistic against Denmark. What do you think the future holds then for Gareth Southgate? Because some are saying, Stefan, this is England's best ever chance to win a major tournament, at least since the World Cup way back in 1966. If England don't win the tournament and they do get knocked out by Denmark, I mean, I think if you reach the final, it's slightly different because anything can happen. But if England don't reach at least the final, what do you think happens next for Gareth Southgate? Because there are talks of a new contract. The FA absolutely love him. What do you think he will do? Do you think he'll stick in? Or do you think he'll walk away? Is there enough talent there to suggest that the World Cup in 2022 is a realistic target?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. I guess what the question is what is the long-term vision of the FA? Do they want to go with longevity and keep a system in place that seems to have developed from the kind of short-term manager, Capello era type thing. I feel like there's more of a system being built from the youth ranks upwards. He wants everybody playing the same, blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all. It's that Germany model from the last 15 to 20 years. If that's priority, then I think Gareth Southgate has to head that because he's started that project and he'll be best placed to continue that project. And as Steve says, he's comfortable as an England manager. He's like one of these managers who seem to thrive as an international manager rather than a coach manager. If you look at the likes of, like, I always felt like if you looked like Gus Hiddink, for example, or Dick Advocaat, one of these type of people, they're like they're national team managers. They're not every day in and out club managers. That kind of lifestyle, I think, suits him more than being the manager of a Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace, that level of Premier League management. So that suits him. If I was Gareth Southgate, I'd be staying in that setup for as long as possible. England managers get beheaded by the press, and he's got the press on his side. So if he gets knocked out against Denmark, I think there'll be some questions asked from the usual pundits who are happy to jump on his back. I mean, if you looked at like Alan Shearer straight after the England-Scotland game, he was stabbing him in the back, really. So there's a lot of pundits out there who are very fickle. I don't think he'll get sacked if they get knocked out. I think he'll stay on if they get knocked out. And I think probably that's the best conclusion for England fans as well. It's looking exciting. The next World Cup's, it's only next year. We've got 1 year to wait for another major tournament. And the DNA of that team's there. And if you have a good run in the Euros, and you've kind of got that competition know-how, as you were saying at the beginning, it's the business end now. England have never done the business end for years and years, back to 1990. So that can only serve them well going into Qatar if they stick with the same DNA, stick with the same blueprint, and keep Southgate on.
And also, you know, in 18 months' time in the Middle East, when that World Cup rolls around, you've got players like Sancho and Foden, with 18 months more experience, players even like Reece James, who's still exceptionally young, he'll be even more experienced as well. So it does look exciting for the future of England on a tournament level. Alan Shearer, you mentioned him there. He wrote an article in The Athletic last week, and he was also asked about it by Gary Lineker on TV, saying, you know, has he forgiven Southgate for missing that penalty in Euro 96? And he said, he forgave him a long time ago. But you can tell when he speaks and when he's asked about it that it still eats away at Gareth Southgate. And he even admitted that's never going to leave him, because he still feels bad for what happened because of the teammates he played with. And he almost feels like it was his fault and his responsibility, the reason England didn't get to the Euro 96 final. And, you know, for him, that's something that he's going to want to rectify. I mean, you were there, Steve, for that game. You know what the moment felt like. Is he forgiven for Euro 96, or will that only be the case when England get to the final or win a major tournament? Or is that just, again, like Stefan was saying, a fickle way to look at it?
Yeah, it's just, of course he's forgiven. He's a human being who, you know, played in that match for 120 minutes and was really good in that game. You know, he had, you know, obviously a few dicey moments, which all centre-halves have, like, but, you know, he was, there's nothing to forgive him about. You know, he was one of the players brave enough to step up and have a go at taking a penalty. And, you know, it's never even come into my head before that Gareth Southgate needs forgiveness for, you know, missing that penalty. And when all this started coming about and Alan Shearer was writing letters in The Athletic and stuff like that, and I was like, oh, I was quite annoyed about it, really, because I thought it's not like a distraction that they needed at that point in time. I thought, just get behind the fella and the squad. You know, we don't need to be dragging any of this stuff up or anything like that. Let him concentrate on his job and the good job that he's doing for England this summer so far. And, I think it's just Alan Shearer just trying to stay relevant, in all honesty, and have his... you know, have his name in the papers and online and getting a load of clicks and stuff like that. You know, maybe we should forgive Alan Shearer for being as dull as he is.
You know, that's
because
unforgivable.
Jesus Christ.
Unforgivable.
And yeah, you know, he's just...
Good job Marley's not on the podcast.
But,
yeah.
but Steve's sort of right. He brings a toxic element to so many conversations, Alan Shearer. I wish the BBC would scrap him because A, he's dull. B, I don't agree with a lot of things he says. Get somebody younger and more relevant on. I mean...
Emma Hayes has been amazing. Fantastic. I think, on ITV. Absolutely brilliant, because she does, I do a bit of commentary, and what you want from a co-commentator is someone who offers something you didn't see. And too often you see pundits and co-commentators saying exactly what you can see on the TV. You know, I don't need someone to describe to me that the ball hit the post, because I can see that with my own two eyes. What I want to know is why it didn't go in. Why did Thomas Müller miss that chance against Germany? Not, oh no, he's missed it. What a chance. I want to know why he's missed it. Was it the pressure? Was it the fact he was running through on goal too straight? These are the things that Emma Hayes offers in punditry and on co-commentary that a lot of other people don't. And I actually think it brings an interesting debate to the forefront of when does a pundit become irrelevant? Now, Alan Shearer, I don't think you can ever say will be irrelevant because he scored a stupid amount of goals and he's the all-time Premier League record goal scorer. So as long as he holds that record, he's always going to be relevant. He's a legend at Newcastle and I don't want to talk him down too much. But certainly, you see some pundits that are getting to maybe an older age and the game has changed so much in the time since they've played the game. And I'm not going to name any names, but it just leads me to wonder when their opinion becomes no more important than the normal football fan, because, you know, a 15-year-old football fan who's been watching the Premier League since 2006 or whatever, may be more in tune with someone like Frank Lampard or someone like Steven Gerrard or whoever, rather than someone a little bit older who's been playing the game years ago.
I think it's when you get pundits who always talk about in my time. So somebody like Graeme Souness, for example, in my opinion, I know Steve is a Liverpool legend, so on and so forth, but the majority of post-match analysis or any type of punditry that somebody like Souness is doing, it's always relating back to his time. I think when you've got to start sentences by saying, in my time, this is what would have happened, you've lost your relevance right there.
It's an interesting debate. I don't know how we've managed to get from Gareth Southgate to TV punditry, but he was a TV pundit once, Gareth Southgate. I'm glad Stefan and Steve have forgiven Gareth Southgate for Euro 96. There's nothing to forgive from Stefan's case.
Yeah, nothing. He's a living legend.
My mum, she said, I'll never forgive that man for what he's done. And she still hasn't forgiven him. He's got to a World Cup semi-final, possibly a Euros final if England get through the semi-final against Denmark. She still hasn't forgiven him. I feel sorry for him. anyway, England, plenty of pre-match talk to come on Football Social Daily tomorrow as they take on Denmark. Tonight it's Italy against Spain. We'll look back at that game on tomorrow's show as well. I'm sure we'll have plenty more transfer updates for you as well. Don't forget, Boyle Sports have got a great offer on during the Euros for any England game, and obviously tomorrow's game counts in that as well. It's a £10 no lose bet on any market. If your first £10 bet on an England game loses, you'll get the money refunded into your account as a free bet. So a decent offer over there at Boyle Sports. You can find out the latest at boylesports.com and on the Boyle Sports betting app. T's and C's apply. 18+ begambleaware.org. That's it for today's Football Social Daily. Cheers, Steve. Cheers, Stefan. Where are you going to be taking in the game tonight?
In my living room. nothing more exciting than that. Before we go, can we do predictions quickly?
Go on then.
Okay, so I'm predicting it'll be Italy 2-0.
I'd agree with Stefan on that. I think 2-0 is a worthwhile bet.
Oh, we'll wait and see. We will wait and see. That's it for today's episode. We'll catch you again tomorrow on Football Social Daily.